We came out of the Maskana yesterday, there are at least 8 different types of fast days. At least 8. Maybe we'll have even more. What are the 8? You have to categorize everything. 8 type of fast days. What are the 8 type of fast days? Dr. Fruchter? There are 8 different types of fast days. Okay, what are they? Number one is Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is the ultimate. That's a Dairaisa. Okay, Yom Kippur is Dairaisa. Number 2 comes the next are the Dalid Tzoymos. These are the 4 fast days that were sanctioned by the Nevi'im, which include Tisha B'Av, Shavuos B'Tammuz, Tzom Gedalia, and Asar B'Teves. Category number 3, Tainis Esther. This is an ancient minog. What is Tainis Esther all about? That's a big, big, big question mark. It's probably one of the most difficult fast days to define. Number, you keep track, number 4. Number 4 we'll assume to be let's say Bahab, okay? Bahab. Bahab is after Sukkot and Pesach. There is a minhag Yisrael, an ancient minhag to fast Monday, Thursday, Monday. We learned yesterday in the Sefer Chassidim. The reason why we fast is it's a bakosha, it's preventive medicine that the crops. It should rain. In the winter, it should rain properly. And in the fall, the harvest season should go according to plan. We learned yesterday other mepharshim that say that time has nothing to do with the future. It's to do teshuva for the averois that we have done over Pesach and Sukkot when we let our guard down during all of the festivities we had with our family and friends. Category number, up to category number 6, I believe. Is a private fast for a dream, a tainas chaloim. A person has a dream and it's not very pleasant, he fasts. Okay, there are 3 things you can do for a dream. You can be mativ of the dream, hatavas chaloim. You can say the hirotzoin when the kohanim recite birchas kohanim, and you can fast. Okay, that's category number 6. Category number 7 is to do teshuva. Private fast. The person did an avera, and part of the process of doing teshuvah, it's a private fast, private kabbalah. A person's privately mekabel upon himself to fast for whatever reason. You have to recite the kabbalah yihiratzayin on the mincha before the day before in preparation for the fast next day. So that was number 7.
Yeah, there was
so
6.
There was 6. So how many do we have? So what? Okay, then there's Tainus Bechorim. Very good. There's another Tainus. The Tainus that we have for this is a whole different reason. Tainus Bechorim, Erev Pesach, is an entirely different fast. Okay, what else? There's more. Oh, very good. Right, exactly. Excellent. Right, that's number 8. Tainus for Yahrzeit. Excellent. On the day when a relative passed away, there is an inyan to fast on that day. We're going to discuss that right now in the Sefer Chassidim. So that's already 8. Okay, there's even more. Let's review. In each one of these fast days has a completely different set of rules. A whole different set of rules. Let's review very quickly. Yom Kippur is the king. Yom Kippur is the only fast day that is Dairaisa and there's no room to budge. This is serious business. Then comes the Tainiyos that was sanctioned by the prophets, which today is only a minog, the Dalit Tzoymos, all parts of the process of the Chorban, leading up to the Chorban. Number 3 is Tainis Esther, ancient fast day, nothing to do with the Dalit Tzoymos, a whole different reason, a whole different set of rules. Number 4 is Tainis Chaloim, a dream, a bad dream. Number 5 is Bahab. Number 6 is to do a private fast to do tshuva. Number 7 is Yahrzeit. And number 8 is Bechoros. So far we've already set out 8 different fast days.
There's another one.
Yeah.
Tainus Atziras Geshamim.
Right. No, Atziras Geshamim. Okay, it's Sibor. That's the, okay. You want to say okay? Fine. That's number 9. Okay, number 9. That's when there's that serious. Doesn't rain. There's a whole Masechta Tainis, and Masechta Tainis it gives over the whole procedure where the Sibor has to come together to fast for Atziras Gisham when the rain already has not come for Atziras Gishamim. Okay, so that's already that's number 9. 9 different types of fast days.
There's also by, it's Chagmayim, but Chavra Kadisha, Zayin Adar.
Zayin Adar, okay, very good. Zayin Adar is a Chavra Kadisha. Why do they fast? They'll do also a different set of reasons. Mechilas Avaynais, from the Mesim that they did not, would not know, they would not treat with Derech Eretz. Or there are other reasons why. Very good. So that's another fast day. That fast day, okay. And then let's talk about. Oh, there's more fast days. There is Ches. You want to say Chas and Kala? See, Chas and Kala really is Nichlal in Nechilas Avonos. That's a private. Chas and Kala really is Nichlal in the fast. Maybe not. Okay, let's. You want to put in a different category? Maybe put in a different category. How do you know that Chas and Kala is different? Because Chas and Kala there's no Hashlama. If a person gets married in Rosh Chodesh. We get married, we only have one chance to fast, as far as I know, for getting married. And that's the day of your wedding. Let's say the day you get married is, let's say you're getting married the night after Rosh Chodesh, and today is Rosh Chodesh. First getting married tonight, and today is Rosh Chodesh. Do you fast? No, you don't fast. Or let's say it's Chodesh Nisan, you don't fast. But there are days when Achos and Kala do not fast. Question, do they make it up? Or do they fast the day before? I don't believe so. It's either now or never. If a person is fasting because of a chaloim, we're going to see now soon, you got to make it, then you do fast. You do fast. If you can't fast because it's not the right day to fast, we'll describe different times when it's not appropriate, you make it up. If a person is fasting because he's doing teshuvah for averois, then if you can't fast today, because it's Rosh Chodesh, you'll fast another day. So you're right. The tainus of Chas and Kala, it's a mitzad echad, it's mochalas, mechilas avoinais, but it has a different set of rules. So if you want to put it in a different category, so be it. Okay, you mentioned that tzuras keshamim. Then let's talk about the other category of fasting, which I don't know how much you want to split here. Erev Rosh Hashanah. Okay, Erev Rosh Hashanah. Erev Rosh Hashanah is also unique. You fast a half a day of Rosh Hashanah, fast the whole day. We said Tanas Bukharim. We said Tanas Bukharim. So Erev Rosh Hashanah, is that considered to be a unique fast with its own set of rules? Or is that considered to be part of Mechilas Avonos? I do not know. What about fasting on the eighth and ninth day of Teves? So if you learn, what is the purpose of fasting on the ninth day of Teves? If it's because of the yard site of Ezra Nehemiah, or the yard site of the person, the Tana, who was the founder of Christianity, so that's Nichlal in a yard site. Or you'll say, no, it's a different type of fasting. There's one thing to fast for your own private relative, there's another thing to fast for Gadol Hadar, Zayin Adar. Zayin Adar, that's the Chevek Hadisha. Why are they fasting the Chevek Hadisha? Are they fasting for the Yart of Moshe Rabbeinu? Or are they fasting because of their work? It's part of the job. Part of the job is they deal with the dead. I don't know. You have to study these matters. And it could very well be that if you study these matters, you'll discover that there's a very unique flavor, unique purpose to this fast that is not similar to the other types of fast days that we have. Ches and Tes. Ches is why do we fast? Because the Torah was translated into Greek. On the eighth day of Teves, it says in Shulchan Aruch, you are supposed to fast. No one today fasts. We don't see people fasting today. On the eighth day of Teves. Why should we fast? It was on this day that the Greeks, the Yavanim, the king of Yavan, he brought together 70 Talmidei Chachamim and demanded of them that the Torah be translated into Greek. 3 days of darkness came to the world on that day because of the Churban of translating the Torah into a foreign language. That, I assume, has a unique flavor. It's a different type of fast. Again, the eighth day and the ninth day, what exactly happened on the ninth day? What about the 20th day of Sivan? What is that all about? That's Tachvatat. So is the what about Erev Shabbos Parshas Chukas? Erev, that's Shreifas HaTalmud. Do those fast days, are they grouped together in one general category of Mechilas Avonos, commemoration of an event? Or do those days have something very unique about them, a very unique flavor that cannot be categorized in other groups, which if we were to go and categorize all the type of fast days, it would deserve its own category. If we wanted to be very liberal in giving everyone its own unique flavor, I think we'll come out already with 15, already up to 15 or something like that. That's very incredible. To have 15 different types of fast days, it's not all the same. When you're a child, oh, it's a fast day today. It's all the same. You can't eat. It's horrible. That's life. Right? That's how we grew up. A fast day is a fast day. Don't confuse me why we're fasting. That's just enough for me to shut me down with knowing that today I have to fast. When you get older and you look into it, wow, we've already gone through here in a few moments describing 15 different types of fast days. Each one is unique, unique in flavor and substance as to why we fast. The rules of the fast days are unique. Let's say it falls out on Shabbos. Can it even fall out on Shabbos? Erev Shabbos, look at the uniqueness, look at the uniqueness of Sreifas HaTalmud. It's always on a Friday. Friday, Erev Shabbos, Parshas Chukas. Where do you have such a thing like that? Where it depends on the day of the week, not on the calendar day. Chof Sivan is a calendar day. What about Asar B'Teves? You don't push it off. Other fast days you push off. Tainis Esther is one, probably the most, all of the fast days, I believe that Tainis Esther is the one that we have the least grasp upon. What exactly are we doing on Tainis Esther? What exactly is it all about? Okay, I discovered, and Rabbi Weil, I'll tell you right now, I'm talking about fast days, so it's fair game, I'm talking about fast days. I something which really blew my mind, Rav Meir, he gave me this very interesting book called Incredible, written by Nachum Seltzer, describing the life and the family of the Wallace family, mainly Yossi, Rabbi Yossi Wallace, who is the founder of Arachim, a Kiruv organization in Eretz Yisrael, a very powerful and popular Kiruv organization. And he comes from good stock. He comes from a long line of very interesting people. And Nachum Seltzer wrote over his family life story, including, of course, everything about Arachim. And there in the story, it all starts with his great-great-great-great-grandfather, who was the last person to die to be killed in the Inquisition. Okay, what is it called in English?
Auto da fe.
He was the last one to be put on trial and to be publicly burnt at stake. Last person. And it's an amazing, amazing story. And in that story, the just like the Germans, Yimach Shemam V'Zichram, the Spanish, the people who led the Spanish Inquisition, they documented and kept the most meticulous records imaginable. An obsession with record keeping. And every conversation was recorded.
It's the largest book in the Vatican.
The records.
The volume on how best to torture a Jew.
But the records.
On PBS, it's the largest volume in the
Vatican. The records there describe the torture of this fellow. His name was, I don't remember his first name. Wallace, he was the last, the great, great, whatever, how many greats you want to go back to the one today who leads Arachim, Yossi Wallace. He was burnt, he was killed, and they tortured him. And in part of torturing him, they got him to confess or to reveal information that otherwise would not have been known. And one of the things mentioned there is that the Rabbanim of that generation, going back 1492, right, going back into the 15th century, mid-15th century, demanded, they were mechazek these individuals to hold out and to die al Kiddush Hashem, and they told them that if there's one mitzvah that you should be meticulously careful to observe, what would you think it would be? If you were a Rav living in that generation, and there was a person who was a Jew, and wanted to keep his religion, and die for his religion. And he said, I can't keep all of the mitzvahs. Which mitzvah should I be meticulous in observing? So what would you as a Rav say? You would probably think, Shabbos, Tefillin, I don't know, Kashrus. You could make up whatever you want to say. You can come up with a million different ideas of why this mitzvah should be the most important mitzvah that you should impress upon a person who's coming to ask what is important. The Rabbanim told these Maranos, okay, you want, whatever you want to call them, these conversos, Anusim, told them the most important thing to observe is, you're not going to believe this, Tainis Esther. The fast day of Esther. In my mind, that's not even on the list. Right? You go through all the different possibilities of what you should observe. I won't even put it on the list of 613 things to put on the list. It's not even the Raisa. Make sure you meticulously observe Tainis Esther. It's in the book. I'm not making this up. The book's right over here on the shelf somewhere. Incredible. Okay? Tainis Esther? What? What are you talking about? Why do we fast Tainis Esther? I always assumed it's one of two reasons. It's either, we went to have a whole shir on this. We had a lot of chidushim. I don't remember what we said on this. A lot of chidushim on this. It's because the Molchama. The Jewish people went to war on day 14. On day 13. On day 13. The Purim miracle happened on day 14. On day 14, they rested. V'noyach. They rested on day 14 from their enemies. On day 13, there was a war. There was a decree, an enactment, that the non-Jews were permitted to murder Jews. There was a counter enactment that gave permission for Jews to defend themselves and to fight back and to kill those who tried to kill them. So there was a war. There was a war going on. The Goyim were allowed to kill us, and we were allowed to kill them, and there was a war, and indeed it says in the Pasuk how many people were killed. A very small amount of people died in the war. Non-Jews. No Jews were killed. When there's a war, what do? You fast. Now today, the IDF doesn't let a soldier fast when he goes to the battlefield. And the Rabbanim will tell the soldiers, when you're on the battlefield, there's no Yom Kippur. You eat on Yom Kippur. That's a given. Today, right, you serve your basic training, Yom Kippur, what do the soldiers do on the battlefield? They eat, pashut, right, they eat. Every rebel will say, you have to have koyach. But in ancient times, you don't eat. When you go on the battlefield, it's an eis tzara, it's a time to do teshuva. You do not eat when you go to war.
Shaul said,
no one's allowed to eat. And anyone who ate... another tainus on the list, number 16 is Mulchama, Ace Mulchama. Okay, very good. And you're from Shot and Echanami, it's a whole different category.
It's not even war. I mean, my son was in the army, so I'm not the fast.
Even when you're not in war, even on you're on duty. When you're on duty, I don't know the rules. There are chaplains, obviously, who tell you the halacha. Everything is I'm sure, there's a Shulchan Aruch to every prat, what the rules are. But obviously, if you are engaged in something very dangerous and the lives of Klal Yisrael on your shoulders, you're responsible. You're driving a tank, obviously, somewhere in the middle of nowhere, in Lebanon or in Gaza, obviously you're not fasting. And the IDF will not let you fast, and the Rabbanim of the IDF will certainly not will tell you, Paskin, that you're not allowed to fast. But in ancient times, it certainly was not like that. In ancient times, when you went to Mulchama, you would fast. So Yud Gimel is Tainis Esther. There was a Milchama. It says in the Pasuk. So we commemorate the Milchama. We also fast. Because Purim is an ongoing miracle. Purim is an evolving miracle. We fast as well. What's the other reason why we fast? Esther fasted. When did she fast? Lech. Pesach. Are you allowed to fast on Pesach? No. You're not allowed to fast on Pesach. So we push it back. Okay? That's the complaint to the Yom HaShoah. If even Esther, we don't have Tainis Esther in Chodesh Nisan, Chazal push back Tainis Esther. The reason why it's called Tainis Esther is because Esther fasted for 3 days. Gamani v'narosai otsum kain. fasted for 3 days, and they fasted in Chodesh Nisan. They fasted, well, it's not so clear, the 13th, 14th, and 15th, or 14th, 15th, 16th, they fasted on Pesach itself. So today, when we commemorate Esther's fast, we cannot fast on Chodesh Nisan. Generally, you're not allowed to fast in Chodesh Nisan. It's a Chodesh of Simcha. So we push it back to right before Purim. Okay, fine. So what in the world does this mean that the Rabbanim of that generation instructed the Maranos be meticulous to observe Tainis Esther? And the answer is very obvious. Esther was the first Marano. That's not the right language. From the first of the Anusim. Okay, whatever word you want to use to describe a Jew in hiding. Esther was a Jew in hiding. She ate seeds. She had a special diet. She had a whole technique of having changing her servants every single day. No one should figure out that she is Jewish. This pasuk, the Esther, lohigid es ama v'es moladita, resonated with the Anusim, the people of that generation, and thus the Rabbanim said, connect yourself to Esther Hamalka and be meticulous to observe Tainis Esther. So do you know what that means, Rabbi Yisai? This is shocking. What it says there in this art scroll book that reads like a novel, like a thriller, it doesn't say in any sefer, heavy duty, heavyweight, major league sefer that I've come across all these years, that the tam of Tainis Esther ad hayoim hazeh is because we're really, all of us, to a degree, Maranos. Everyone in this room is a Marano because we live in a very dangerous world. And even though we think we own America and we display with a lot of pride ani Yehudi, there is within every single Jew today in this world, in America and in Eretz Yisrael, an element where you're hiding. Because we're afraid of the Goyim. And although we're proud to be Jews and we display our Jewishness all over the place, we don't display every little detail, every nuance of our Jewishness. There is a bit, a lot more, and by some a lot less. But every single Jew in the world, even the Jews living in Mea Shearim, are holding back just a little bit because we're in Golus. We're in Golus, and the world is watching. They're watching us in Eretz Yisrael, and we're afraid. We're afraid. We're proud to be Jews. We own America, right? We think we own America. We think we can do whatever we want. But we all know deep down, watch out. Don't get too carried away. We'll take advantage, freedom of religion. We take advantage the best that we can, and we're proud to be Jews, to promote our Jewishness. But who are we fooling? Who are we fooling? There's a mashahu in even the proudest Jew. There's a mashahu of restraint. Because I'm afraid. It's a non-Jewish world. We're in Golos. We're all Maranos. Who was the ultimate Marano? Esther Hamalka. Esther Hamalka was living in the king's palace, in the seat of anti-Semitism, living with the two greatest Jew haters of the world, where they're sitting and plotting together to eradicate, to destroy the Jewish people right under her nose. She's sitting right there and she's hiding that she's a Jewess. And we identify, we connect to her and we fast. We're just like you, Esther. You sat in the king's palace, you hear that you're a Jew, and now you had to come forth. Lech kinois kol ayudim. We identify, it's a Tainis Esther. We all are Maranos in Golos, and we need to succeed in hiding our Jewishness until the time comes when we can be Megale to the whole world, Ani Yehudi, Ani Yosef. Amazing. It's a whole different type of fast day. It's not Muhammad. Break it up. This Tainus Esther. Pashtus is, it's Muhammad. Or it's an extension of an Eis Tzara. Lech Kinois, it's Kol HaYehudim. Vitzumua, there's a Gezerah. There's a Gezerah, so we'll fast. No. A Gezerah is a Gezerah. Muhammad is Muhammad. Esther was a Marana. She needed Siyata Deshmaya to survive. To survive and wait for the right moment when she can reveal that she indeed is a Jew and would be allowed to live and can use her influence to change the world. We're all like that in this world today. And that's why the Rabbanim told these Maranos, that's what you must focus on. Amazing, amazing. To me, this totally blew my mind. This insight, the whole book was worth it just for that one page, because we spent a lot of time on this, Tainus Esther. It's something which people struggle with. You see the Mefarshim, they don't have an easy time defining the nature of Tainus Esther. They don't. They just really cannot put their finger on it. All the reasons why you'll find in the various Svarim for Tainus Esther do not do justice, do not answer all of the questions.
That's why they call it Tainus Esther, not
Tainus. Yeah, why is it called Esther? Why is it Tainus Milchama? And if it's Esther, since when do we push it back to Erev Purim? You don't have a fast day the day before the Yom Tov. What's going on? And if you want to have a fast day, so have it Erev, Rosh Chodesh, why before the time? There are many, many questions. It's a big, big topic of discussion. I've never seen this before. It's a whole new category. Esther, to borrow the terminology of the Spanish Inquisition, was a conversa, a marano, an onus. Those are the three words, or in English, a pig. Okay, a marano means a pig. Those are the three words that are used to describe who she was. And think about it. Nothing has changed. Just a little different, you know. Baruch Hashem, we can walk around the streets with our heads up, our nose up in the air. But we're afraid a little bit, here and there. Why are we afraid? What are you holding back? We're like Esther. We have to draw from her inspiration. Okay, now with that said, let's go a little bit more into it. He has some really, really nice things here. I don't know if we even get to it because we spend all this time discussing this. But we are on page Reish Beis. 202. Reish Beis, page Reish Beis, we're in the Halacha Reish. Reish Chof Ches. Reish Chof Ches. Masha Kosev Nislach Loi, Kishamevi Karbon Al Amezid. This that it says in the Pasuk, Hashem will forgive you when you bring a Karbon Al Hamezid. So here is the question. We just finished learning above that a Karbon is only offered for a Shoigig. And a Karbon has to be accompanied with Teshuvah. So how then can there be such a thing of bringing a carbon when a person does an avera b'mezid? Asham shivcha charufa. There is a collection of karbonos that are done when a person does an avera afilu b'mezid. So how could that be? Doesn't that go up against the entire principle that a carbon is only offered when you do an avera by accident and you do teshuva? If a person did an avera b'mezid, then there is no teshuva. So he explains, Masha Kosov, the nislach lo kishemevi carbon al hamezid. For example, b'shvuas ha'edus u'b'shvuas ha'pikadon v'asham shiv harufa. He gives you three examples when a person swears falsely. A person knows. Is approached, please come to court and testify on my behalf. Be for me an expert witness. And the person says, I swear to you, I don't know anything that can be to your advantage. I take a shvua b'shem Hashem. And he does this b'mezid. or a person is approached, if someone says, you owe me $1,000, and he says, I swear to you, I don't owe you one penny. And that's an outright lie. He knows good and well he owes money. Uvasham shivcha charuv, a man has relations with a woman who has been designated to an Eved Kenani. You have a shivcha kenanis, a shivcha kenanis, the different interpretations of what a shivcha charuf is, but let's right now learn from one interpretation, a non-Jewish woman who is a slave, who has been put into the mikvah, and is chayv in mitzvahs ki'isha, and she has been designated to be the wife of an Eved Ivri. If another man comes along and lives with her b'mezid, and then realizes that he's not allowed to do that, he knows he's not allowed to live with this woman who has been designated to be the wife of an Eved Ivri. He brings a Karban Asham. Three examples of a person bringing a Karban Asham, two for an oath, one for being Ba'al Shifra Harufa, and the common denominator of all of these examples are, they were done b'mezid, and yet you bring a Karban. Isn't that a contradiction? And the answer is no, it's not. Kishahu oise teshuva. A basic rule is, even in those examples, he cannot bring the Karban unless he says, I made a mistake, I am sorry. It goes without saying, 99% of the Karbanos that are offered are only done when they're done by accident. So if it's done by accident, it's very easy to say that you are sorry. But when you do an Aver B'mezid, it's very hard to say you are sorry. A prerequisite to bring the Karban is you must say, I made a mistake and I am sorry. In America today, no one can survive a day. The way this country is structured, it's not a law. It's not a law. It doesn't say this anywhere in any constitution, not of the state, not federal, not state, not local, that a person has to say they're sorry before they are sentenced. Okay, today in America, there's two phases of judgment. There is guilty, not guilty, and then is the person guilty, not guilty, then there is the question of the punishment. So the person, he can plead guilty, and you can skip the first stage, or you can plead innocent and then be convicted that you are guilty. And now the judge has to sentence the person. Usually that's how it is. What happens if a person is defiant and he goes, it's the day of sentencing, and the person says to the judge, Judge, you're a crook. This country is criminal. There's nothing good about this country. I did nothing wrong. I'm innocent. Or even if I'm guilty, I'm happy what I did. What is the judge going to do? Says here the maximum sentence is life imprisonment. You got it. You're not sorry. You've been convicted. You're guilty. You don't want to admit to confess your guilt. You're guilty. The law has determined that you are guilty. I can either let you go with community service or I can lock you up for life in solitary confinement. The law allows me to go to both extremes. And you want to maintain this attitude of you're innocent, you've done nothing wrong. What's going to happen in America? I'll give you the book. I'll put you away forever. But what happens in America if the person says to the judge, Judge, I'm sorry, chatasi, avisi, pashati, I made a mistake, and you bring people to come and show what a good person you are. I didn't understand the depth of what I was doing. And America has proven to be a country, more or less, not all the time, but more or less, they're very forgiving. Even the worst criminals, if they cry and they say they're sorry, it's incredible how far you can go. Not all the time, of course. Okay, justice has to be served, but it's amazing. There are books and books you can read. Well, how generous a judge today can be. And the people that you find get locked away for a long time, one thing you know about them, they never say they're sorry. Okay, I'm not going to give you examples, my pet peeves, but there are certain people are defiant to the very end. And when you're defiant to the very end in America, you got a big problem. You got a big, big problem. So here he says, in the Beis HaMikdash, they don't even let you walk in until you say, I'm sorry. It's not my man's wife. The Shifcha Charufa here, you caught me. Good for you, you caught me. Two witnesses were standing outside when I went into I went into this guy's house. I know he went on vacation. And this guy is married to a Shifra Charufa, a Shiksa, no? A nice woman, very appealing. I walked into the house. I seduced her. Bad luck. Bad luck, right? There were two people watching. They convicted me. So you come now to the Beis HaMikdash. I want to bring a carbon. Are you sorry? Are you kidding? Sorry? I had a great time. You kidding? I'm sorry? I'll do it again. Do it again? Get out of here. There's no kapara for you. There's no kapara for you. You have to say you're sorry in every case. Kushahu oise teshuva. Next. Al hashgagais mevin karbon b'imein mevin karbon nenoshim aleim. If you do not bring, so I won't bring a karbon. Big deal. If you don't bring a karbon, there is divine retribution. Afal pisha ein kavanosil kad. It's a very frightening concept. That if a person did an avera by accident, how am I supposed to know that the food they were feeding me was treif? How am I supposed to know they fed me chalef? I went into the supermarket. There was a Hechsher. It had the Badatz, the OU. It had CRC. It had every good Hechsher you could imagine. How am I supposed to know they never took out the chalef, the forbidden fats? How am I supposed to know? I'm not responsible for this. You sure are. You ate chalef. Chalef is kores b'mezid. B'shoyeg karbon chatos. If you... I'm not bringing a karbon chatos. If you don't bring a karbon chatos, in Shemayim, they're going to strike you down. This is our emuna. Isn't this amazing? Isn't this an amazing concept? That's what it says. I did nothing wrong.
Well, the Gemara explains why.
So the answer is not so simple. What I just said is really not so simple. In that type of case, where really, it's totally not your fault. It's really not really true, I just said. They're not going to get, you don't bring a karbon. If you go into the supermarket today, think about it. If you go into the supermarket today, halacha lemaisa, you go to Moishas, or to Pomegranate, or to Glatmart, or wherever you want to go shopping, you order by Milmart. not under your jurisdiction. And if you go and you buy today meat, and then there's a cold koire that comes out and says, meat, throw it out, kasha your pots, we did not take out the correct chalef. Treiburing is a very complicated process. Our mashkichim were not properly trained. They were trained to take out the kosher fat and leave in the non-kosher fat. So you've eaten chalef. Today, would you bring a karbon chatos for eating chalef? Not likely.
Well, the Gemara...
It's oinus.
It's a different... Yeah, yeah.
Oinus.
The Gemara just says, well, what does the Gemara explain in Hari? It's very simple. It says, your responsibility is because you elected those Rabbanim to trust.
It's too far away.
I understand.
The guilt...
Right.
The Rabbanim are the ones that may have to bring.
You made that guy your rabbi. You're responsible for being stupid.
But that responsibility does not translate into you bringing a karbon chatas.
Right, I understand.
So a few years ago in Muncie with that guy who was selling non-kosher meat.
Okay, yeah, there wasn't chorus. That was a loisase. That was birds. Birds...
No, even, as it turned out,
it was meat,
nevelis.
Okay, but it wasn't chalef. It wasn't chalef.
Okay. Had sold a lot of treif meat.
But treif meat, there's no chalef. I think even on treif meat, they didn't chalef on treif meat. It's not likely in those stories that we had in modern times, recent times, where there would have been a chiyuv kares b'mezid. It wasn't chalef. It was nevelis. Nevelis is a loisase. You don't bring a carbon. You don't bring a carbon for nevela. But let's talk about a situation, a theoretical situation, which can happen, and probably does happen every so often, where you actually eat a kezias of chalef.
Right.
Even if you have chalef today, not necessarily will you have a kezias. If they don't treiber it correctly, and they don't take out all of the fats, and then they end up serving you a piece of meat, how much is there? A kezias is an ounce. A solid ounce. In liquid form, it would have to be 3 ounces. In liquid form, it would be 3 ounces. In solid, it have to be an ounce. Do you always have a situation where you know for sure you ate a kezias of chalev d'oraisa? Very unlikely. Maybe, yeah. If it does happen such a thing where a person knows for sure that he ate a chalev Daraisa, a kazayas of chel daraisa, would you bring a carbon chatos today? No, because you're an oinus. It's totally not your fault. What do you want from me? There's a hechsher. There's zavada kashrus. Zavada kashrus. What? It's not my fault. Oinus rachmana patre. You would not bring a carbon chatos. To bring, it would be, you would have to be the mashkiach. You would be kashering it yourself, and you know what chelev is, and you made a mistake, and by mistake, you were not in the proper frame of mind that day. You had a bad day, and instead, you didn't cut the right thing off, and you ended up yourself. You know what chelev is, you know what shuman is, and by mistake, you went and you mixed the two up. Then you would bring a carbon chatas for your mistake. The chances, there's so many questions today in that in kashrus for person michayev karis as a consumer is almost non-existent. But let's say a person would need to bring a carbon chatas. It's interesting thing that if you do not bring a carbon chatas, then there is divine retribution. And that's not a question. That's not challenging, because in every carbon chatas that you do are required to bring, there really is guilt. There is guilt. You should have been more careful. A carbon chatas is a soft spot. It's a very complicated soft spot. Nishtahi nishtaher. If it's not your fault, you're exempt entirely. If you did it knowingly, I know what I'm doing, and I don't care, then you're amazed. Amazed does not bring a carbon. You have to do a lot of teshuva. It's not easy to get atonement for doing an aver b'mezid. When do you bring a carbon chatas? When you're guilty, but not so guilty. Nishtahi nishtaher. I didn't do this on purpose. But I definitely could and should have been more careful. You have to be able to make that statement. That I definitely should have been more careful, and I could have been more careful, and I was sloppy, and I ended up doing this by accident. That is when you bring a carbon chatas. It's a soft spot. So being that there is indeed guilt, now we understand that if you do not bring the carbon chatas, then there is divine retribution, there's going to be punishment. Melech she'ein kavadas lekach. Now he gives an example. Melech Basavadam very quickly, which goes out shlo lahachlif mos. A melech Basavadam gives a gzera, do not exchange money. Now, I don't know what this means. Does this mean counterfeit money? I don't think so. I think it means I want everyone to use $20 bills. Makes a gzera. No one should use tens and fives. Only 20. He likes Andrew. He likes him. Only $20 bills. V'shaga echad, a person made a mistake, v'hechlif, and he exchanges one bill for another, or maybe he changed foreign currency. Maybe it means no exchange foreign currency. Only use in this country what's native to the country, American dollar bills. Any store is caught using foreign currency, he's going to be arrested. And a person did not know the rules. He did not know that there's a law that you're not allowed to use. You're not allowed to use foreign currency. Can he say to the king, it was an accident? Will he forgive you? The bottom line is, you made a mistake. The bottom line is, you publicly violated the law of the land. Oh, it was an accident. Okay, it was an accident, but the problem is, you still violated the law. There's a degree of guilt. Gam ata badaver hazekein lefnei melech malchi amlochim akadosh baruch hu levilti lema lefnei hamalach ki shkagahi. There is guilt. Even though it's not my fault, I did not know. I take that back. You should have known. You could have known. You're guilty. There is a degree of guilt. And for that guilt, you need atonement. And the atonement is a karban chatas. Okay, there's a lot more I want to do today, but we have to stop here. Take a very short break. And then we're going to learn about the sugya of pinyon peter chamor. Anyone have at home a donkey?
How many?
We have plenty.
Anyone have a donkey? Peter chamor tifteh v'seh v'imloy sifteh v'araftoy.
There's a site called Reconnecta. And the Reconnecta is put together by descendants of Marranos. A lot of them trying to find
you
a way back.
Right, you told me.
So they have there that in South America, amongst a lot of Hispanics,